Good morning. It's a joy to see you. Thankful for our visitors that are here. It's so good to have you with us, and thankful for everyone online that's participating as well. This morning's lesson, we're going to be talking about assignment. Don't worry, this isn't a pop quiz. This isn't something to, you won't find tests underneath your chairs, but we're going to be talking about assignment and the idea that there is purpose and intentionality to your life. Your life is not based off of luck or coincidence or fortune, but there is real design to you being here right now in this place, in this very moment. God has great expectations and purpose for your life, and there is a great need for us to make sure we understand this assignment he has for each one of us. Perhaps you've seen this picture before. I find this hilarious, of this algebra problem. Someone's clever comments on here. And this algebra problem, finding X, and they circle it, and they say, here it is. And just a cheeky way of answering this math problem. I see this, and I think that a lot of times people tend to want to think like this, where we kind of, from a certain perspective, this is a correct answer. You could say, I did find it, and this was my definition of how to solve this problem. And there's a certain flippantness to that of like, yeah, I solved that problem. I just solved it my own way. And that type of thinking, though, that type of mindset of letting yourself write the rules, redefine the assignment, is a very, very dangerous way to be thinking in reality. We sometimes esteem ourselves so clever, but we really miss what is expected of us and what we're designed for. Sometimes we can have really clear consciences and really strong convictions about something. Like, no, I know, I found X. There's the X. X marks the spot. I found it. I circled it. I know it's in the top middle part of the page. There's X. I totally believe I found it. Well, you can believe that with all your heart, but that doesn't mean that you understood the assignment and actually met the expectations that were on you for that. That wouldn't fly very far with your math teacher in the classroom. Like, oh, I really believe I found it. Well, that's nice you really believe that. You still get a zero for it. You get 5 points for at least writing something down, maybe. And there are some teachers like that. But the point is, we need to understand the assignment. And a lot of times, we don't understand the assignment. Satan really, really desires to muddy the waters, to have us be detached from what is expected of us. He really wants to move the goalposts all over the place to where eventually we're not even knowing what the rules of the game are. We're just running around in circles doing what we think is right, and we're totally detached from what is expected of us. I saw a comic years ago that always really stuck with me, where there was a man that's about to be tempted and faced with something, and so the cartoon little angels that typically pop up on someone's shoulders representing, you know, their conscience, the little angel shows up on his shoulder, and there's a little poof, and he looks at it, and he looks at his other shoulder, and nothing happens. And he looks back at the angel and says, isn't there supposed to be another guy? And the angel responds, you were doing such a good job by yourself, they didn't send anybody. That always stuck with me. It always stuck with me in thinking of, if we don't even know what direction we're supposed to be, if we don't even know what good is or what the right path to take is, we're just lost. And just wandering. It doesn't matter if you're not going the right way. If you're lost, there's a lot of wrong ways to go in being lost. There's only one way, the narrow way, that is Jesus. And if Satan can distract us from Christ, it doesn't matter what we pick, it's wrong. And so keeping our focus on Christ, this narrow path, this one-way truth life in Christ, if we move away from that, we have no hope. And so the assignment we're now going to see is we're going to really dig into knowing Christ, you know, and getting closer to him. But this not getting the assignment shows itself in many forms. I think of the questions in the New Testament, people pose Christ and pose the apostles, like, who is my neighbor? You know, they're not getting the assignment. If you're thinking about who do I get to love, who can I not love? How many times do I need to forgive my brother? I think of Simon the sorcerer trying to buy spiritual righteousness and getting the gift of the Spirit through just paying enough money to get it. To a certain degree, I think of Martha just trying to do enough, just trying to work enough to but then not realizing the bigger portion, the greater portion is sitting at the feet of Jesus. So there's so many ways to miss the goalposts, but it's so important for us to understand what is the actual assignment. As I mentioned, it is Christ. And we're going to see the beginning of understanding the assignment here in Acts 17, verse 26 through 27. He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way towards him and find him, yet he is not actually far from each of us. So our first part of understanding your assignment in life is to know that it is not by chance that you are here, that God purposed you to be born in this time, in this place, amongst these cultures and nations, that it's not coincidence that you are alive in 2025 and residing here in Alaska, or visiting here if you're from somewhere else. But your placement in time and your placement on the planet and the home that you were born into was not coincidence, but God purposed all that for you to find him. God created a world that had optimized settings for you to have the greatest environment to find him. And the beautiful part of this passage is that he's not far from each of us. I've said this before, and I'll say it 1,000 more times, that God is the worst at hide and seek. He wants to be found. He created a world in which we can find him. If we seek him, we will find him. And he's actually not far off from us. He's right here with us always, as Jesus says. So our first big point for your assignment in life is that you are intentionally created by God to be here right now. And to know that it's not by chance or accidents, fortune or luck, that you have this amount of time, place on the planet, and that is by God's direct divine design. So now we're going to see that there's a lot more than coincidence going on in your life that you are living here today. Look at this, 1 Corinthians 3, 5 through 9. I'm sure many of you have read this passage before. What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, as the Lord assigned to each. That's super interesting. We're going to come back to that. I planted, is Paul talking, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. He who plants and he who waters are one, and each will receive his wages according to his labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. So this is so interesting, because what this verse has just taught us is that people, if not at least preachers, are put into your life through the assignment of God. So the people you cross paths with are not just happenstance, but God is at work to present himself and grow you towards him. Now, I've read this passage, I don't even know how many times throughout my life so far. And it wasn't until preparing for this lesson, digging into this more, that there's a real new rich perspective on this that came to mind. And that is, for a long time, I kind of saw this as somebody's really outgoing and presents you the gospel, and then somebody's really encourages you to maybe think about that gospel more. And then God sees that combination of personalities and combinations of thinking, and then he's like, I can work with that. And then he causes this growth. But what we're seeing here is that the planter and the waterer are extensions of God. God is at work in sending people out to meet people, and that the planter and water, they're not significant in themselves. They are part of God's mission and God's work. So when you are presenting the gospel to somebody, when you are encouraging someone to believe that gospel, that's God working through you, not just us having a good idea on our own. So that really, really redefines how we look at our relationships around us, where God is at work in our relationships, sending us to others and making sure we're available to receive others being sent to us. And I find that so fascinating, and it really makes me want to pause and listen to the people around me and be present for the people around me. Because the implications of this is that we're not just a pool of personalities that sometimes mesh and sometimes don't, but God is actively working through his people to make more of his people and to grow his people more. So planting and watering are not just personalities that God jumps in on, it's him working through us all. And I find that just invigorating in connecting to people and trying to serve and also be served by others. Here's a great example of this in Acts with Philip the evangelist and the Ethiopian eunuch. So Acts chapter 8, starting verse 26, an angel of the Lord said to Philip, rise and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. That's a very specific place to be going. This is a desert place. And he rose and he went, and there was an Ethiopian, a eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of all of her treasure. He had come to Jerusalem to worship, and he was returning, seated in his chariot, and he was reading the prophet Isaiah. And the Spirit said to Philip, go over and join this chariot. So Philip ran to him and heard him reading the prophet Isaiah and asked, do you understand what you're reading? You kind of have to imagine that. Do you understand what you're reading? And it's amazing he's reading out loud with it, but it's such an iconic moment, and just the amount of comfort zone Philip has abandoned to have this happen in the desert now. How can I unless someone guides me? And he invited Philip to come up and sit with him. Now the passage of the scripture that he was reading was this: like a sheep he was led to the slaughter, and like a lamb before the shearer is silent, so he opens not his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken away from the earth. And the eunuch said to Philip, about whom, I ask you, does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else? Then Philip opened his mouth. It's a very powerful statement. He opened his mouth, and beginning with the scriptures, he told him the good news about Jesus. And as they were going along the road, they came to some water, and the eunuch said, see, here is water. What prevents me from being baptized? And he commanded the chariot to stop, and they both went down into the water, Philip and the eunuch, and baptized him. And when they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord carried Philip away. Not exactly sure what that looked like, whether that was just like poof, he's gone, or if he just continued running and jogging off into a different direction. But the eunuch saw him no more and went on his way rejoicing. But Philip found himself as Azotus, and he passed through and preached the gospel to all the towns until he came to Caesarea. I mean, what an adventurous moment of evangelism. I love this story for so many reasons. But another layer to this that I want to encourage and equip us with this morning is that Philip was sent by the Spirit to go and to have this conversation with the Ethiopian eunuch. The Ethiopian eunuch, someone had connected him with this scroll, and there's a lot building up to this moment. There's a lot of planting and watering and growth. You kind of see a whole snapshot of that taking place, but you can start seeing the threads of God has been at work to build up to this situation from a lot of different angles. But more deeper than that is that this has been recorded for you and I to learn something from this. What do you think we're supposed to gather from this passage? It's that God sends his people out to do his work, and he's working on people for them to receive those workers for him then to grow. And so you and I, as his servants, as part of his church, are sent out into other people's lives and have people sent into our lives, and that God is so involved in our relationships. Our relationships are not just what we have arbitrary control over, who comes in and out of our lives, but God is involved in the sending and the receiving of people into our lives. And that really makes us need to pause and evaluate our relationships and realize, okay, there's more going on here than us just happening to be at the same place at the same time, but that God is involved in sending people into your life, and to not reject people or send people away, but at least be connecting them, see what, maybe there's a lot more going on here than what I might be perceiving. In 2010, I just came back from South Africa, and I was working at my family's sign shop. I got really stir crazy there working at that shop for that 3 months in that summer. And so I was planning to go to Bible school that fall. And so to give me something to work towards, I decided I'm going to do something adventurous. I'm going to drive my motorcycle to Texas to go to school. And so I planned this big motorcycle trip, and I was working at the Bible camp that summer, and I was planning to leave the day after Bible camp. Well, all these storms came through in Alaska in late July, and it was going to be right in like British Columbia, Yukon Territory area. And some of our friends at Bible camp, Russ and Lindsay Wallace, heard about these storms, and they said, "Mike, we're really worried about you to be driving your motorcycle through these storms. We'll pay for you to fly down. We'll ship your motorcycle to you. We just really are concerned about it." And these are my friends, and I really looked up to them in some things, and so I thought about it, and I didn't know what to do because I was really excited about this adventure. And so I called my dad, as I had about 10 hours to make a choice whether or not I was going to, because I had to leave at a certain time to get there in time. And my dad's advice was, "Well, what do you think you're going to remember more, the soda you drink on the plane or your 9-day trip on your motorcycle?" So I thought about that some more. I was like, "Okay, we're going to go for it." And there's a lot of great stories from that trip, but I'm going to tell you one. So my friend and I, at that phase of my life, I was a different Mike in some ways. And some of you remember the mohawk and things like that. And I went through this strange phase, me and one of my good friends that we had in mission work in South Africa with, we went through this phase, I was still kind of in, even though I was out of South Africa, where we just really didn't like big corporations. We wanted to do like local hole-in-the-wall stuff only. And we had some negative experiences, particularly with Starbucks. And I say that to make the rest of the story make sense here in a moment. So I'm driving the motorcycle through Canada. It's like day 3. And where my phone breaks, I would call my parents every night to let them know I wasn't dead. And so we're in Cranberry, Canada, and I'm driving through, and my phone's not working. So I needed somewhere that had Wi-Fi, because I had this little tiny laptop, so I could Skype. We don't even use Skype anymore. Use Skype to call my parents, let them know that I was still alive. And looking around, and the only place I see that has some Wi-Fi available is Starbucks. I see Starbucks, and I'm like, "Oh, I don't want to go into Starbucks. It's a big corporation." And it's like, "Okay, I'll go into Starbucks, but I won't buy anything. I'll just use their Wi-Fi." And so I go into Starbucks, and I get my little laptop out, and I start calling my family. And one of the two of the baristas, a guy and a girl, see me, and they come over and they say, "We can see that you're traveling through here, not from around here. Here's a chai latte on the house." And I was just like, "Oh, thank you." And this was revealing to me the amount of hospitality Canadians, I guess, have. Because as I'm drinking this nice warm chai latte, which was very, very nice, middle-aged lady comes over to me and she says, "Hey, I can see that you're traveling through here. We don't normally do this, but if you need a place to stay, you can stay with my family tonight. Just think about it and come and sit with us over here if you're interested. If not, it's okay, but we just wanted to offer that to you." And at first I was like, "You are weird. I'm just this young guy passing through on a motorcycle. Instantly, Joseph Potiphar's wife. That's weird." But then she had some kids with her, and so I thought about it, I prayed about it, and I was like, I've been driving 500 plus miles today. I don't have a place to stay. I am really tired. Canadians seem pretty cool. So I go over and I was like, let me just talk with her. I'll pray about it. And so I prayed about it and I went and spoke with her. And they had recently just taken a trip to Alaska. And so we connected over that. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I'll spend the night there and hit the road tomorrow. So I go spend the night there, and they order pizza, and it was just this great time to connect with them. And I look over their fireplace they have there, and they have a Quran, a Book of Mormon, some literature from Jehovah Witness, and a few other kind of religious-esque books. And I said, those are interesting. What are what's going on there? And they said, we're trying to decide what we believe. We're trying to figure out what's real. And so we're in the middle of trying to decide what to do with our lives because we realize there's something, that spirituality is real, and we're just trying to figure out what's true. So I'm actually on my way to go to Bible school right now because I think this is really interesting. So we had a wonderful conversation about God and about Christ and about the Bible and why the Bible's reliable. And it was wonderful, wonderful. And I go to brush my teeth at night there, and they had a five-year-old girl, and she comes in while brushing my teeth. She starts brushing her teeth too, and she has a little one of those toothbrushes has like a suction cup on the bottom of it that you can put on things. And so me just trying to be playful and like fun, I take her toothbrush and I stick it on the mirror and she kind of giggles and laughs, but then it falls off the mirror, it bounces and goes into the toilet. And I'm like, oh. And so I take it out real fast and wipe it off with soap and I'm like, shh. And put it in there. And her name is Isabel, and sweet little girl. And I got a message from her like just a few months ago, where she actually kept up with us on Facebook, and she said it was from that time when you passed by and introduced to us Christianity that we kept thinking about it and praying about it, and we all became Christians. And I'm now married to a youth minister here in Canada, and we just want to say thank you for your years of service and passing through and coming to our house that one time. And I'm just floored because this wasn't some great evangelistic mission scheme of mine. It's just like, I hate Starbucks. But okay, I'll go. I wasn't really on the prowl looking for this type of thing. And I just mentioned that because this is not me being so spiritual. It's God at work sending people out to people who are seeking. If you seek, you will find. And these people were seeking. And so God's going to send them someone to help them find. And this wasn't just a one-off thing. This is how the Lord works in his field with his people. And so for you to be very sensitive and for me to be very sensitive about the people that are entering into our world and making sure that we're being sent into other people's worlds and not thinking that it's just our personalities and interests that are driving our connections, but God is at work in connecting people to where they need to be. And I find that so invigorating and refreshing in how we approach the people around us. So be very sensitive to the people around you. So the verse that was read for us before I got up here, 1 Corinthians 7:12 through 24, a very, very important passage that's going to continue to deepen this concept of assignment to your life. Where here in this passage of scripture, we see that certain things are assigned into our lives as well. And I need to preface this with there's some really, really blurry lines between our free will and God's providence and his direct will being applied. So it's kind of like if you were to hold up something that has some nutritional facts on it, some food, and you're reading the ingredients. It's like you can see the ingredients here, but you can't see the proportions. So there's our free will and then God's direct intervention, both kind of happening at the same time with these things. I don't know what the ratio is. I just know they're both ingredients to these circumstances. So What we see in 1 Corinthians 7, 12 through 24 is that each person has a life that God has assigned to them. And he, in this context of this passage, the things that are assigned are marriages to some degree. And if you're, particularly if you're married to someone who's not a Christian, that there is a mission to possibly save that person by you staying as a Christian spouse to a non-Christian and showing them Christian love, that through that you may be able, they may end up responding to that. So there's a mission aspect of being in that marriage. Same with your children, also with your heritage of where you came from, that's not coincidence. And even as ESV translates bondservants, as your translation might say slavery, but if you're in this financially desperate situation where you're having to be a bondservant, an indentured servant, that type of circumstance, that God has an expectation for that role, but not just an expectation, as we see here, verse 17 that I highlighted here, that the Lord has assigned to him. So that really needs to give us some pause to think about what circumstances we find ourselves in and realize God really might have a mission for me in this place, in this relationship, in this circumstance, that it's not only by your choices that certain things happen, that certain relationships form. And again, those lines are blurry, but those are ingredients to the life that you and I are living. So our last verse, last passage I want to bring before us before we conclude is also in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. What I hope to encourage you with this is to show just how involved God is in your life. He's involved in your birth, the time of your birth, the place of your birth, the world that you are born into. He's involved in what preachers and people are brought into your world and that you're sent out into others. He's involved in your circumstances and having an assignment for how you were to be on mission in those very specific circumstances, because all of us are so different and have different circumstances. And he's finally involved in every single temptation you ever face. He's observing you with like a filter or like a sieve, that every single thing you'll ever face, he's making sure nothing's going to reach a certain threshold. And if it does, he's going to be directly intervening to make sure that you have a way to escape. He is so involved in every moment of your life. He doesn't just know the hairs of your head. He's with you every millisecond of your existence, right there faithfully with you. And he has an assignment, and he's helping us complete that assignment. That's why our final point here is that you have a mission possible for your life, should you choose to accept it. You are not just, you're not just totally left alone to your own devices, but God has an expectation, a purpose for your life. Suffering is quite miserable in itself, and it will drive you crazy if you don't know that there's a purpose to things. But when you can see that there's purpose for what you're going through, what you're doing, now you have a mission, now you have something to move towards. And so understanding how much mission is in your life from God, how much purpose there is to your relationships, and that the goalpost that Satan moves for us, your life is not about a pursuit of happiness. That's not the assignment. Your assignment is not for you to pursue all of your personal dreams. Your assignment is to seek God and know that he's not far off and to find him. And you're going to find that he's a lot more fulfilling than anything you could ask or imagine. He's going to blow your dreams out of the water. The joy you find from him is going to totally reduce your happiness to something silly. So you have a possible mission from God, and it's possible because he's with you through it all. So your life is full of assignment. Your time, your placement, your culture, your marriages, your children, your past, your relationships, all of that have the fingerprints of God all over it. And so trust him. People are hard to trust sometimes. We really value and have really emphasized wanting to have boundaries with people, don't be in toxic relationships. We have a lot of conversations at times about those types of things. And we need to be wise. We need to be as innocent as doves and shrewd as serpents. But we have really started to move towards having a lot of control to have the right kind of life we want. But Jesus says things like, bless those that curse you. Love your enemies. Forgive 70 times 7. Turn the other cheek. Those types of people that you're having to be around, those sound like pretty toxic people that you were supposed to be forgiving towards. So what I challenge with us in that is that you very well might be sent into a very toxic person's life to be a light to them. And you might have someone come into your life to come bless or challenge you in certain ways. So just don't be flippant. Don't just be like, found X. But think about the assignment where God is sending you out, sending people in, and that there's great purpose into your life. Your life is not just, see what happens. God didn't just wind up this world and be like, I'll be back later. He is so involved in every moment of all of our lives, looking for us to seek him and find him. So let that be the mission of your life. That's what really matters. And you can get 100 on the test, okay? He's with you, and he wants you to succeed more than you do. He wants to save you more than you want to be saved. He is this committed with a nail in each hand. He's all in for this to work. So trust he knows what he's doing. If there's anyone here who has not accepted the mission of Christ to join him in his mission of saving the world through baptism, or if you have any other needs here that we can pray about together, please let us know while we stand.